And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick. I wanted to just give a huge shout out for The Receptionist for iPad. They've been a sponsor for this podcast for 4 years in a row, and I just want to say how grateful I am to their partnership and what they do for the not only therapist, but also medical community. Your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like billing or simply trying to make a cup of coffee between appointments or trying to use the bathroom, constant interruptions can derail your entire day. This episode and this year's podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist, a sign-in app company. The Receptionist for iPad is a HIPAA-ready digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients or patients can check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from the interruptions and make the most of your time, because it is valuable. Start a free 14-day trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, this is Patrick, and I wanted to share something really exciting with you. The All Things Private Practice podcast is changing to the Neurodivergent Entrepreneur podcast. When I discovered that I was autistic ADHD 5 years ago, everything changed for me. It's wild because at that point in time, my career had just taken off. Over these last few years, I've done a lot of deconstruction, worked through a lot of internalized ableism, learned as much as I can about neurodiversity in general, and I really want to start unpacking what it means to be a neurodivergent entrepreneur. So in this podcast, I'm going to be interviewing other neurodivergent entrepreneurs of all walks of life and all different areas of business and creativity, thought leaders, visionaries, creatives, leaders, etc. Real, unfiltered, authentic conversations, no positive psychology, always highlighting both sides of the coin with a lot of nuance, a lot of duality, and a lot of honest conversation, highlighting the strength and the struggle. Make sure to download, like, subscribe, and share the Neurodivergent Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey everyone, you are listening to another episode of the All Things Private Practice Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Cassell. I'm joined today by a friend and colleague, Anna O'Brien, who is a LPC and art therapist in the Philadelphia area and owns private practices, parts of private practice communities. But most importantly, we're going to talk about a creation of hers called the Consult List and the importance of connection, using technology to our advantage in the mental health community space without it impacting care, with ensuring that we have more accessibility, that people feel less alone and isolated. So I really appreciate you making the time and coming on here to share some of your story.
Oh, thanks, Patrick. It's great to be here.
So tell us about what you're doing, because the whole reason I wanted to have you on is because you've created this concept. I met you back at a retreat that I hosted last year when I thought your name was Aaron O'Brien for some reason and had your name tag very misspelled, which you took in stride.
There is an Aaron O'Brien in the Philly area. And she's a therapist and it begins with a vowel. So you got really close.
I tried my best. It was an overwhelming event at first. So I appreciate the grace there. So tell us about the Consult List. And what I mean especially is the vision and the why, because I think that's really the important piece here with what you're working to create and working so hard to give to the therapist community at large. So yeah, share a little bit about what it is and why it came to be.
Right. Well, thanks for asking. So yeah, I after probably similar to a lot of people on this podcast, have gone through that journey of and the struggle of kind of leaving community mental health, maybe joining a group practice, and then deciding, do I want to go into private practice? And the fear of how am I going to fill up? How am I going to marketing myself while I love talking one-on-one with people, like the idea of an internet presence and really like was terrifying to me. I feel like I'm an older millennial. And so sometimes I'm a little bit behind the times. So which is funny that I started a tech company. But anyway, so what I was thinking is like, how am I going to get these referrals? And I entered started private practice at the very beginning of the pandemic and was lucky to fill up quickly, partly because I was able to bring a lot of clients from the group practice on. And I took some insurance. So just if you're struggling, I had some things on in my corner. But what I quickly swayed into was the problem of having like people calling and being full or not being a good fit. And then stressing about like the no callback guilt, like, oh my gosh, I've got to call that person back. But then, you know how sometimes when you're feeling not great about something, you kind of tend to procrastinate it. So like, you know, I'd be like, oh, I need to call that person back, but who am I even going to send them to? And I noticed that people were saying a lot of therapists weren't calling back. And I think it's because probably a lot of us were feeling that feeling of like, well, where do I even send them? I can give them the three people I like to refer to, but I know from talking to those people regularly that they're also full. And saying check your insurance company is a nightmare. You know, saying like scour Psychology Today, you know, I've had situations where, you know, I was trying to get someone support for a specific issue that I didn't specialize in. And if you go to Psychology Today, sometimes people are claiming that they do things that they don't really specialize in. So, you know, you really want to give someone a good referral, but then you're weighing it with like, but how much extra time do I have? So I was just thinking there's got to be a better way. And I thought about, I think with my art background, I'm always trying to be creative and solve problems. I thought about a solution and I luckily have a business partner who is really good at the tech side of how can we create a system where like I can say, hey, I can't see this person in a HIPAA compliant way. How can I share a little bit of information about what they're looking for and send it out to either my preferred list of contacts that I know and trust or other therapists in the area? And if they're available, they can quickly like click a button to say like raise a hand to offer a consultation. And that person that's on the phone, I've given a link that is a unique link that they can check and see who responded. So they have a qualified list of providers that meet their financial need, the specialty, the time of day they need to be seen, and perhaps the area if it's in person. And they know that these people like want to talk to them. And then they get to be empowered to make the choice. So we're really excited to get it going. And it's kind of a grassroots effort because our whole thing is like we wanted to be therapist funded and therapist founded and, you know, really keep in line with a clinical judgment, not valuing money over clinical care, good care.
I love that. And I love the concept because you're right. Like not just because of the pandemic itself, which certainly increased the frequency and need for mental health care, which we saw an explosion of people entering the private practice realm and space, which is great, but it really does become that extra administrative task that a lot of therapists really struggle to do, whether it's for a variety of reasons. I feel bad because I don't have anywhere to send them. I don't have time to do it. I just don't feel like I have my executive functioning is able to be able to go down this list of tasks that I need to do every week and still see my clients and do my notes. Mm-hmm. But it's a major issue, regardless of the reasoning behind it. And it's just another barrier to care. And what I've always found to be true is a lot of therapists, and I don't want to use blanket statements in this podcast, but a lot of therapists really struggle to feel like they're offering some sort of rejection. So that means calling a client back and saying, I don't have room, or I don't see client A, B, and C, or I don't feel comfortable with this issue or area. And all I found that clients really want is a landing spot. Like they're way less concerned about working with you and much more concerned about finding someone to work with. And if we are able to offer solutions to that problem of making sure that everyone finds the right landing spot, everyone is able to get seen for mental health care as accommodating as we can be, I think that's a major step in the right direction. So what you're trying to create here is really cool. And I know that there's a lot of labor of love, right? Because you said it's grassroots. You want it to have integrity, align with your values. That sometimes means building slower because you may say no to certain collaboration efforts or sponsorship efforts or investment efforts. So tell me a little bit about the behind the scenes of creating something like this because you clearly believe in it, right? And that's obvious. But then when it's like, this is a lot of energy to get this going, what's that like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's a really good point. And yeah, it has been slow growing. So we've been at this for about a year and a half. We like kind of did our beta launch in October. We have about 1,200 members nationwide and more on the Mid-Atlantic area. So there are like the Philadelphia area, it's working kind of slowly. And we've got pilot programs and hospital systems. So that's another thing we want to engage with, like primary care doctors, hospital systems, school counselors, so that they can enter referrals only. But it is slow, right? Because we don't have this huge budget, and basically our advertising has been word of mouth and podcasts and things like that. But it's like, I believe in this so much and I want to see it succeed so much that I would rather stay true to my values and like really struggle financially for a little bit with it than do a quick fix, get some money or, you know, some sort of partnership that doesn't feel aligned with the value. And then all this time, and I do feel like this is like, I know that I have other things inside me, but this is definitely like my leap in life of trying something big. And I believe in this. And I don't want my life to be defined by like, I tried this thing and it didn't work. And then I just chased the money. I really wanted it to be like, okay, this is it, you know? And I really don't want it to fail. I'm really passionate about it. That being said, there are plenty of failures along the way with anything that's even successful. And I think we all have to get used to that. But if it does for some reason not end up like how I wanted, I know that the connections I've made and everything along the path is going to lead to something very positive in my life and hopefully in the lives of others. So that keeps me going too. It's just like, you know, if I just focus on my values with this, it's gonna work out. I don't know how it's gonna work out. I don't know what that's gonna look like, but it's gonna work out in a way that I feel good about.
Yeah. And I think it takes so much time to get something off the ground when you have this vision and you're also trying to sell people on not just the vision, but also implementing how to use said piece of technology or platform. And, you know, I talk about this a lot, but if you have a value-centered business as an entrepreneur, it does feel a lot more satisfying. Like, of course, we want to see the results, right? Like, we definitely want those things or we wouldn't be doing these things for a lot of reasons. But even with my Facebook group, my podcast, we have people like throw money at it because, oh, you have a large following. We'd love to get in front of your audience. And I am so selective. And I think it means that my growth for my Facebook group and podcast numbers are much more organic because it's not going to be a situation where we're going to take money from X investor or platform that I don't believe in, because I think my reputation is their reputation and vice versa. And if I refer you to a business or a platform that is just not well run or not managed well, or values don't align, or they screw you over, it's similarly to saying like, here's a contractor I like, and then they show up, take your money and never come back. Right. That's a reflection on me. And I think it's a lot harder in the short term when you have to understand like organic growth takes time. Word of mouth takes time, just like building any business, private practices included. In comparison to like, hey, so-and-so is going to give me X amount and give me 50,000 followers. And like, does that feel in alignment with the values that our businesses are trying to uphold and bring to the world? So I commend you for wanting it to be values driven. Now, you were mentioning like before we started recording the practice piece, because practicing these things on a daily basis, whether it means failure, whether it means being uncomfortable, being vulnerable, being open to criticism, growing outside of your comfort zone in general, this stuff is challenging and it creates a lot of self-doubt, imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and insecurity. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what you were thinking when you kind of mentioned like practicing and really making sure that this stays consistent, because I think consistency is also key.
Right. Yeah. You know, we was just at a marketing workshop with Aisha Shabazz, who does some work with marketing in the Philly area. And I'm sure nationally too. And she used that expression, practice makes progress. And that really stuck with me because that's true, right? It's the more that you do something, the more that you kind of are able to stomach the results, right? So, you know, our nervous system sends us the message of like, when we have a fear that like, this is life threatening, our brains can't differentiate that. And so it's normal to feel like the fear of being outcast, right? As human beings, we need each other to survive. So when you are like, if I do this, you know, I mean, that like fear fantasy is like, people are going to reject me. their brain thinks like, well, I'm going to be left alone to die, right? And when you do it and you recognize like, okay, like I'm still here, you know, and again, like when you're values driven and you believe in what you're doing, then it's okay if someone disagrees with you or someone doesn't see your vision. You know, I mean, of course, we'd all love everyone to cheer us on all the way, but like that's not in everyone's interest. And people are going to feel like it's competition or just not really get it. And that's okay, right? And I think it doesn't feel okay ahead of time, but I think once you get into it and you keep practicing doing that, it's just easier to get up and do it again. You know, because if I, you know, reach out to four people about making connections and I get lukewarms or cold answers for three of them, but I get that one person who's like, yes, I see you and I see what you're doing, that gives me enough fuel to keep going. And I think you just kind of have to get used to that. It's kind of a numbers game. And, you know, I'm speaking of ADHD, Patrick, I have raging ADHD. So I'm going to get ready to enter into a different tangent of like something that I wanted to bring up. But like when you're doing something new, also what you need to kind of, what I've noticed and what I've needed to do is that like, if you think of, you know, I don't mean to get grad school on us, but like with Piaget and the idea of how humans learn, like when something, when you introduce a new concept to someone, they look at it as like, what can I like assimilate this to? Like, what do I know that's like this? So when you're coming out with a new book or a new series, like people are gonna be like, oh, so it's kind of like that, right? And it's really challenging. And at times like people will, you know, or you'll feel like no one wants my product because they think it's like something else. But if you know that you're there to offer something different, what you need to do is just keep doing it so that people can show up and keep talking about it, so that you can get past that stage of assimilation and you can help people like accommodate this new understanding of what this thing is and create a separate box in their brain for it. But that takes time, and we can't expect that people are going to learn that immediately. And I think that's been a big thing for me too, is like my patience with other people and my eagerness to get the message across and knowing that like I need to continually show up and explain this, because I'd be the same way if I was hearing it. You know, my brain, the way human brains work is like we try to put it in a box that we're already familiar with.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. And I think that for any of you who are listening and are creating something, it can be anything, there is that moment where you realize like you're going to be much more excited about your creation than most of your audience is going to be. Yeah. Unless you already have a massive audience who is just like chomping at the bit for everything that you're putting out there. So I know when I started private practice coaching a couple of years ago, I knew I could do it. Like I knew I could help people get their practices up and running, do it differently, really tap into the authentic piece of the ownership side. But nobody knew who I was. So I was much more eager in these conversations with people who would show a little bit of interest. And you get a lot of rejection, because you need a know, like, and trust factor when you're trying to sell anything. And it just started to take more patience. But in reality, what was happening is that the quality of the product or the coaching program or whatever was trickling out and trickling down and rippling. And then all of a sudden, so-and-so tells their friend, hey, have you seen this? Hey, have you tried this? Hey, have you heard of this person? Have you checked this resource out yet? And that starts to spread. Mm-hmm. And I think that as a somewhat impatient person who his ADHD often runs off with the creative side and is like, oh my God, this is so great. I want everyone to know how great it is. It's almost like exhibiting some restraint and patience in a way of like taking a step back, taking a breath. Okay, let's break down the fact that you have 1,200 users right now or people who are using your platform, and it's growing. Like we're using these hospital systems, we're starting to create this ripple effect, right? Because then more and more people tell each other, then more and more people sign up. And I think those are the results that really feel good. And that's like the word of mouth referral when you're in private practice, when a client goes out and says, my therapist helped me with A, B, and C, you should go see them. That's a great referral. Mm-hmm. A family friend or a friend of yours or a colleague is referring to you. That's a great referral. Like that's the organic stuff that you've worked really fucking hard to mm-hmm. obtain. But it takes a little bit longer because the quality is there over the quantity. Yeah. And I think that's something that is really challenging when people are trying to launch their big beautiful, creative, energized ideas with the world, because it's like, why doesn't everyone see how amazing this is? Because look at how amazing it is.
Right. Yeah. And we're, as therapists and as consumers of therapy, people are selective and they value that human connection and that relationship and like the trust factor. So I feel like even if we had like decided to go the route of getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars thrown into Facebook ads, it wouldn't have mattered, right? Because we're talking about something very sensitive to people's hearts, you know, that human connection and that building rapport. And that's why ultimately I don't think AI is going to take over therapy. And I don't think that these companies that are valuing profit over people are going to work, because this is not like buying, you know, a new pair of shoes that look cool, right? This is about a lot more. And so the same with your business and my business, and for people seeking therapy, those referrals from word of mouth of like, hey, you know what, we've made this connection and we have trust and I'm liking something that I want to share with you. Like I see a therapist that I like, or I'm on a platform that I like. That's what really cultivates that. And it's so much more valuable, but because it's valuable, it takes longer, right? It's not like just throw some ad money out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the catch 22 is like, it is valuable and it can be so, so amazing and have such an impact on so many people. So a lot of our instinct is like, let me scream this from the rooftops all the time. And it really does mean that like intentionality behind relationship building is so crucial in how we get the word out about our programs and our ventures, because podcasts, coaching programs, retreats, like the audience and the know, like, and trust factor has to be there. And you either have to develop it on your own, or you do have to use the leverage of somebody else's audience who does believe in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think both can exist, and you can create your own audience while simultaneously leveraging other audiences who already trust who's putting the information out there. And I think both are really important pieces for this, because that's the best way, in my opinion, to really start to make a lot of this stuff come full circle. And, you know, you can get caught up in the quantity too. Like I can get caught up in like, how many downloads did this episode get? And in reality, I'm like, I don't really fucking care anymore, because I know that the feedback is always really positive. So as long as we continue to deliver good, valuable content and good interviews and great episodes, the episode downloads, whether it be a month or a year, are going to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And that means every time I check it, even if I obsessively check it, that like maybe week one, X amount is downloaded. But if I check it in a year, the acknowledgement that every episode is continuing to increase in downloads says that that organic reach is trickling out. And again, it's just a patience thing. Right. And for those of you who are creating, I know how hard that can be, because like you work so hard on this stuff and there's so much of yourself wrapped up into these creative processes that there's a lot of vulnerability and there's a lot of sense of self. And if things don't go the way we want them to right away or in general, it hurts. Like we're human. It makes sense. But do not let that prevent you from trying again or pushing forward or continuing to practice, because it is a one foot in front of the other process a lot of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point. And, you know, it made me think too, like a lot of factors play into why people attach to certain things and don't to others. And I think that the quantity piece that you were talking to is like, you know, you could have a podcast title that says something like, you know, listen to this podcast for your chance to win $1 million. And it could just have like the most vapid, I know that's not your style, but like it could have the most vapid content ever, right? And really not move the needle in terms of like people's lives. And therefore, like what you're doing, there, it's a ripple effect of the, like you're then helping the end clients, and then you're helping those clients like help their family and friends. And I mean, you know, it really is like the butterfly effect, right? So we can get like huge download numbers or, you know, and then really like deliver something that's not as valuable as something that maybe doesn't have as catchy of a title or isn't as easy to digest and has a smaller amount of downloads, but like a higher percentage of people who listen to that, like walked away with like a real moment of clarity that they brought with them into their lives and had a bigger ripple. So there's so many different ways that value and it can be, you know, assigned It's easy to forget that, you know, when we're in the middle of it and when we're in that fear space.
Absolutely. And I think that those types of listens or follows or subscribes are the ones who come back and listen again to another episode or share with a friend. If you're using these strategies for marketing purposes that are just like, let's get as many people in the door as possible, the odds of people like becoming recurring listeners or followers or subscribers or sharing your stuff goes down drastically. But the short term, the dopamine hit that comes with quantity really does impact a lot of people, and it skews perception in terms of value. So I really do challenge everyone that's listening, if you're creating anything, to really try hard to just acknowledge the work and effort that you've put in, acknowledge how exciting and creative it feels for you and the community, and give yourself time and space and patience. And I know that can be very, very challenging. And, you know, if I was to look back at my career leaving community mental health in 2017, I don't think I ever thought that I would ever utter the words that I had a sponsored podcast or that I was hosting a retreat in a medieval Italian village that I rented the entire village for. Like, those are not things that were possibilities 6 years ago. And it has been a lot of painstaking self-doubt and insecurity and imposter syndrome along the way. But it's also been a lot of, like you said, practice and progress going hand in hand and continuing to show up and having consistency and also having some bumps along the way, because that's totally normal. And for those of you who are trying things that are, they're just not feeling like they're working, or it's feeling like it's taking a lot to get off the ground, that's the message here, is just continuing to try, because life is so short. I don't want to reexamine or look back and say, like, I never went for it. I at least tried to get my idea off the ground. I think that feels so much more valuable and validating and rewarding. And of course we want them to be successful, but like, the effort has to be there. And I think it circles back to the why.
Yeah. You know, so true. And one thing I also wanted to like point out as you're talking is thinking about when you're doing things that you're passionate about and are authentic and it's your authentic voice, that's what makes it. That's the magic sauce, right? Like, and it's going to take people a while, right? Like, if I hear retreat, and I went on one of your retreats, it was not at all what I was thinking. I think, you know, sometimes you hear retreats and you're not sure. Like, maybe you think of your 1980s definition of what a retreat would be, you know? And it's like, so it's like creating something and being like focused on the, like, you know, knowing your ego is going to get in the way, your fear is going to get in the way, everything, you know, that fear of abandonments and, you know, being outcast by your tribe is going to get in the way. But what is ultimately important is that you're like, I know that what I'm doing at the end of the day, like, I'm into, you know, like, you know, I'm into this, and other people will be too. It's just, you know, there's this woman named Megan Cornish, who's awesome. She's got a great LinkedIn profile. She does a lot of marketing for therapy companies. And she just posted something. I like wanted to read it because she's talking about how people are calling her an influencer. And she said, in my opinion, like, she's talking about, like, I don't feel like an influencer. I just eat like the sandwich that my kids threw down on the ground. And I was excited because it meant I didn't have to make lunch that day, you know? And she was saying, like, in my opinion, it's not always about leading a life worth emulating. It's about leading a life worth living authentically, courageously, and wholeheartedly. That's what matters. And I think that when you have a business that aligns with that, like, it makes your life worth living. It makes, you know, it brings real value to the people around you. And that means, though, that you're not going to capture 100% of the market share or whatever it is. Like, you are going to be speaking to people. We need that connection. We need to be able to relate in that way.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful ending point for this conversation, because that's just really powerful. So I hope that everyone's able to soak this in and really, really start to think about this for themselves in terms of wherever you're at in the creative process and your entrepreneurial journey. And I think that's what makes good entrepreneurs too, is the ability to pivot, adapt, shift, grow, fail, work through some of the emotional side of it. And that's really the goal of this podcast, is to help all of you do that, regardless of whether you're starting a private practice or you're not even a mental health entrepreneur at all. But I think all of these things go hand in hand. So Anna, please tell the audience where they can find what you've created. I almost called you Aaron, and I was
like, I would love that. That would have been a great way to end this. So it's Consult List. We actually, like, we're the Consult List, but we're thinking about shortening it to just consultlist.com. And you can learn more about us. Also, since we're so word of mouth, if you're interested in helping spread the word and, like, you know, creating kind of your preferred referral list and sending it to people in your community, that's really what gets this up and going, right? Because if there's like two people in your city using it, it's not of much value. So if you want to reach out to us, we'll be happy to supply you with some materials to get the word out. And we're really excited. And we hope that it helps both therapists and growing therapists, and also helps the healthcare systems. And, you know, we're also working with some community mental health agencies as well to help the uninsured or underinsured. So we just want to collaborate with anyone who kind of believes in our vision and has their vision of in their career dovetails. So please reach out. We're always open to dialogue.
I love it. And all of the information will be in the show notes for easy access so that you can find Consult List, check it out, become a part of it, share it with your communities, and use it as a resource to help more people, because it just creates more accessibility to mental health care. To everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out every single week on all major podcast platforms and YouTube. Like, download, subscribe, and share. Doubt yourself, do it anyway. We'll see you next week.